Non, merci, j'ai mon poison personnel. Bien. En attendant, et pour fixer les esprits, si on venait à cette soirée du 3.
J'avais remarqué que l'un des... Ma conviction... J'avais vu qu'on se servait sans aucune réserve. Mon principal, cela me conduisit, il est vrai, à... Je me rendis à Nancy, où je passais plusieurs semaines. Je vis le vieux. Je fus témoin des... J'en ramenais les impressions les plus prégnantes. J'avais poussé une de mes patientes à... Je lui avais permis... J'arrivais toujours à la... J'attribuais le fait qu'elle... Ma famille... Avec mon ami, je fus chargé de... Ce qui m'amena à... Je dois maintenant exposer par quel chemin... Je viens de faire... Je me livrais dès le début à... Je me servais d'elle pour... J'étais parvenu à... Je décidais en mon fort intérieur. Je ne manquais pas de... Mes premières allusions. Je ne pouvais croire qu'elle... Je ne pratiquais plus que cela. Je disposais d'une quantité importante de... Je lui proposais de... J'eus à gérer tout seul son héritage. En ce qui me concerne, je soupçonnais plutôt... Il ne pouvait comme moi... Je fus capable de... Mes propres... Je n'étais pas préparé à... Je ne savais pas non plus à l'époque quand... J'étais remonté. J'avais renoué avec... Je ne l'appris que par la suite, grâce à... Ma... Je fis alors un pas lourd de conséquences. J'allais à mon... Cette expérience me coûta... Elle m'apporta... C'est pourquoi je réservais seulement à l'autre type. C'est ainsi que je fus amené à... Ma conscience. Je n'ai plus par la suite l'occasion de revenir sur mes... Si je jette aujourd'hui un coup d'œil rétrospectif sur mes... Je peux reconnaître. J'aurais aimé... Afin de prévenir des malentendus, je tiens à souligner que je suis fort éloigné de...
Donc, vous n'avez rien vu, rien entendu.
Ce que je me contente d'affirmer, c'est que j'eus... Je fis... Je nie... Pendant longtemps, je ne compris pas pourquoi. Jusqu'à ce que j'eusse appris que... Je fis un jour une expérience. Je me doutais depuis longtemps. J'étais délivré. L'une de mes... Elle me passa à son réveil les bras autour du cou. Je gardais la tête assez froide pour ne pas... Je pensais... Je fus tiré d'embarras par... J'avais souvent... Je décidais de... Mes incitations. J'abandonnais donc. J'étais assis. Je le voyais. Mais sans être vu de lui. Mais je veux faire encore une remarque. Je pense que... J'ai toujours traité avec beaucoup de respect la personne. Il a à mes yeux... J'ai déjà signalé que la recherche des causes... Il faut que je mentionne une erreur à laquelle j'ai succombé. Sous la pression de mon... De mes... J'ajoutais foi à ces récits. J'avais trouvé en ces expériences de séduction sexuelle de... En me soupçonnant de... C'était l'époque où je... Parce que je fus contraint de reconnaître par la suite que ces scènes de séduction forgées par mes... Je leur avais peut-être... Moi-même...
Vous attendez quelle heure il est ? 2 heures du matin pour m'avouer que vous allez aux putes, hein ?
Je regrette. J'ai essayé de venir à bout de ces problèmes. Je l'ai appelé... On m'attribue, ce que j'ai jusqu'ici communiqué...
Mais vous n'arrêtez pas de mentir depuis que vous êtes là, mon pauvre vieux.
Je ne peux évidemment pas savoir qu'elle... Je pense que le jour où je dois ajouter encore que...
Quand est-ce que vous allez me dire quelque chose que je puisse croire ?
J'ai... J'ai vu en elle, je l'ai démembrée. Je n'ai jamais cessé de ma vie, je l'ai longtemps, je suis maintenant, je me suis soumis à mes propres, je me suis écarté quelque peu de mon chemin, j'ai pu montrer que c'est pour élucider cet effet que je tiens personnellement mais ce qui m'a attiré avant tout, ma principale, j'ai également eu recours à l'héritage. J'ai eu qu'une part directe réduite à d'autres. Ce que j'avais essayé, je m'apercevais de plus en plus clairement que j'avais donné, je ne saurais conseiller à personne de faire de même. Je ne peux personnellement plus me rendre.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
And I'm Costa Pradanovic. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:08 p.m. and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
All this, plus your weekend weather forecast, brought to you by Environment Canada.
Today's top stories and segments are Segment 1, our science and technology correspondent Marco's discussion of this week's top science findings.
We also have Majora Pajonk, a solder student at UBC, discussing her new crime-fighting app idea and how it may help citizens become more engaged in creating safe communities.
Later in the program, Segment 3, an interview with UBC students' intent on raising awareness and helping support the protesters in Hong Kong on campus and around the world.
As well as a report from news correspondent Emily Blake, who wrote about Deepan Budlakoti, a 24-year-old Ottawa-born man who recently lost his bid for Canadian citizenship. We also have Greenpeace representative Aaron speaking with news correspondent Valerio De Feo about the importance of preserving healthy Arctic ice and their upcoming event to raise awareness about this issue.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, UBC's ISIS Research Center will change name to avoid controversy. UBC's ISIS Research Center, based out of Sadr, was initially named after the Egyptian goddess of fertility. However, in light of the recent rise and proliferation of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the research center announced it would change its name in order to disassociate itself from the radical group. UBC's research center is not the first to be affected. Other organizations, including an online payment service as well as a pharmaceutical company, were forced to rebrand by the unfolding conflict in the Middle East. Not all groups are allowing themselves to be bullied into changing their lives. In the United States, a student feminist group at Fordham University that also used the acronym ISIS decided to stand by the name. Named I Stand in Strength, the group felt it would be more in keeping with the name, their mandate to remain independent of outside forces. The ISIS Research Center at UBC is only the most recent case of an organization forced to reconsider its name due to the unfortunate coincidence.
In local news, a war monument photo will be unveiled in New Westminster. A photograph, one of the most famous Canadian pictures from the Second World War, will be unveiled tomorrow in New Westminster, BC. The photo is of a young boy running from his mother's grasp and reaching out to his father, who is marching by on his way to the front lines. The monument will be unveiled by Warren Bernard, the little boy in the photo, who is now age 79. In a recent Globe and Mail interview, Bernard said, quote, "That's probably the last time we were together as a nuclear family," as they put it today. "We were never together again as a family after that moment." Bernard's parents divorced shortly after the war. The famous photograph has come to symbolize the war's effect on family ties and the struggle that surrounds holding on to important relationships. Warren will be speaking at the unveiling ceremony this Saturday and the 4th of October.
City of Vancouver files against CP Railway over Arbutus Corridor dispute. The conflict has been a long time coming. For the past two decades, the Canadian Pacific Railway has refused to accept any offers made by the city for the purchase of the Arbutus Corridor. The line was decommissioned 13 years ago in 2001 and has since been zoned as a green space for local residents. However, recently CP Rail announced it would clear the land and begin using the rail line, insisting that they retained the right to do so despite the rezoning. The 11-kilometer strip of land stretching through the False Creek and Kitsilano suburbs was cleared, destroying a number of community gardens that had been standing for over a decade. In response, the City of Vancouver said, quote, "The refusal by CP to reach a reasonable agreement on the future of the Arbutus Corridor is tremendously disappointing and frustrating, but the city will continue to responsibly advocate for citizens' interest and strongly oppose the reactivation of the rail line." In addition, the spokesperson characterized the tactic as one of the threats and bullying, and insisted that the city would not give in to CP Rail's request for tens of millions of dollars more than the land is worth. The City of Vancouver offered $20 million for the Arbutus Corridor, a number that is comparable to the prices set by a similar railway purchase in Richmond. CP Rail maintains that the city has been refusing to acknowledge the real value of the land. An agreement has yet to be reached. In national news, Canadian government continues plan to destroy war plans to help combat ISIS. The Canadian government has announced it will deploy several war planes on a six-month mission to Iraq. The planes are to join an international coalition of countries executing airstrikes on Islamic State forces. Harper also noted that airstrikes on Syria were not out of the question. However, he did vow that there would be no ground deployment of Canadian troops on this mission. The mission's goal, according to Prime Minister Harper, is to, quote, "significantly degrade the capabilities of jihadi extremists." The objective is not to destroy the ISIS, but to significantly reduce their power and military influence. The plan has been met with opposition from both the NDP and Liberal parties, who accuse the plan of being too vague. The NDP's Thomas Mulcair said, quote, "The Prime Minister hasn't outlined a broad strategic blueprint for the mission," and Liberal Justin Trudeau added that he does, quote, "absolutely accept that the Islamic State is a threat to global security, including to Canada." However, Trudeau added that, quote, "the case that must now be made is how Canada can best get involved in a way that minimizes and reduces that threat." A vote to approve the plan will take place in the House of Commons on Monday.
In international news, the Ebola virus continues to ravage West Africa at a quickening pace. The current outbreak is being hailed as the biggest and most complex outbreak of the virus since it was first discovered. The number of confirmed cases has now topped 7,000, of which the virus has killed nearly half. Ebola continues to spread uncontained at a perpetually quickening rate. The Center for Disease Control projected that in a worst-case scenario, potentially 1.4 million people could be infected by mid-January. However, those numbers have been scrutinized and considered extreme by many. In a more conservative reading, the World Health Organization now projects that nearly 20,000 people will be infected by November. Just last week, the director of the organization called the epidemic the largest peacetime challenge the world has ever faced. Containment methods are still faltering, and the response by the international community has been criticized for not dealing with the issue soon enough. According to the Financial Times, the IMF and World Bank have pledged nearly $530 million towards the containment of Ebola. That's on top of other humanitarian efforts from an assortment of different actors. If one would believe the rhetoric of mass media, the virus seems to be knocking on the doors of Western countries, although the threat has been quickly mitigated and systems have been effectively put into place to deal with the issue. Just earlier this week, a man who arrived in Texas from the affected region of West Africa tested positive for the virus at a Dallas hospital. The results came after the man had allegedly been screened multiple times before being admitted into the United States, and he had told officials that he had not come into contact with anybody with the virus while overseas. The patient was last reported in serious condition. Those who had come into contact with the man are currently being monitored closely by health professionals in an effort to contain the virus immediately. However, the threat seems to feel much more imminent than it really is. News media coverage has tended to be aggressive and inflammatory. Professionals have reiterated time and time again that both Canada and the United States have systems in place to contain and deal with the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. And while those systems may be tested yet, there's little reason to panic and fear among the public and media alike.
Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned.
As the Arctic ice melts, oil companies are moving north to drill for more fossil fuels. An oil spill in the Arctic would have catastrophic consequences, both on humans and wildlife. That is why millions around the world believe that the Arctic needs to be protected now. On Saturday, October 4th, bring some wheels and ride for the Arctic across Vancouver with Greenpeace. Come to Connaught Park at 10th Avenue West and Vine Street at noon. Bring your friends, family, and colleagues and start being part of the solution. A message from Greenpeace.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
In Vancouver, thank you for being with us. Up next, we have our weekly science and tech segment with Marco. How are you, Marco?
Good, thank you. This is Marco from AstroTalk. Now you're going to listen to the latest science and technology news. In the first story, from Hong Kong, an app called FireChat, it's a messaging app, is off the grid. FireChat is an app that lets users FireChat is an app that lets users chat without a cell or internet connection, and it has been downloaded over 100,000 times in Hong Kong recently. FireChat is an iOS or Android app and bills itself as off the grid. In nearby mode, the app uses Bluetooth to connect to nearby phones that also have the app. If lots of people have the app, they can form a distributed or centralized network. This means that a message can be passed from phone to phone in a daisy chain, connecting users that are farther away from each other. This is ideal when Wi-Fi is not available. FireChat lets users send updates about the protests and about police movements in Hong Kong. By the way, China has just banned not only Twitter and all other YouTubes, but it also has banned Instagram. In other local news or Canadian news, Bob McDonald from CBC has a headline saying, "Space is not the place for international politics." In a recent move, Canada has denied visas to Russian and Chinese delegates that are coming to Canada, that were to come to Canada to attend a space conference in Toronto. Bob McDonald says, quote, "Space is no place for borders." The International Space Station is an international collaboration between Russia, China, Japan, and Canada. Canada has denied the visas to the Russians for their activity in the Crimea, and for China for their human rights violation. Sergei Krikar, a head of the Russian cosmonaut team training center in Moscow, has also been banned from the conference. Stay tuned for more updates. In other space news, the NASA rover drill has done its first taste from the Mars mountain. An image from the Mars Hand Lens Imager, or MALI, on NASA's Curiosity Mars rover shows the first sample of dust collected from a hole drilled in Mount Sharp on Mars. On Wednesday, September 24th, rover's hammering drill chewed 2.6 inches into the Martian soil, which is 6.7 centimeters. Data and images received at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, confirmed the success of the drilling. Rover landed on Mars on August 2012, and since then, it has been studying sites for drilling. From this data, it has sensed that ingredients and a chemical energy favorable for microbes is in the Russian soil. Within the past 15 months, Rover has driven 5.5 miles or 8 kilometers to study various drilling sites. Curiosity's deputy project manager, Jennifer Trosper of JPL, said, we're putting the brakes on Rover's ventures to study this amazing mountain. This mountain is in the Farrump Hills in the Murray Formation, close to some place called the Confidence Hills. Next step is to deliver the rock powder sample into a scoop on the rover arms, test it, and identify the chemistry and mineralogy of the source rock. NASA's Mars Science Laboratory project aims to assess ancient habitable environments and major changes in the Martian environmental conditions. In other news, in local news, a conference being held in Nanaimo this week with chemistry professor Paul Connett of the UK shows a bad light on Canada. Professor Paul Connett said Canada lags behind on sustainable waste disposal. This conference is to discuss zero waste proposals, because zero waste is catching on around the world. But Professor Paul Connett said, and quote, "Canada is a major disappointment." Connett is the keynote speaker in the three-day zero waste conference in Nanaimo. His talk will emphasize how incinerators, waste landfills, and seas riddled with trash are hurting our environment. This is all evidence, according to Professor Connett, of that our throwaway society simply cannot be sustained on a finite planet when we throw our waste like this. For 30 years, Connett has been giving pro bono seminars on zero waste in Canada, US, and the UN. But Connett says Canada has dropped the ball. Ontario is building large incinerators, and Edmonton's organic waste program is not clean. The goal, or so says Professor Connett, is to direct 90% of our waste into clean waste disposal systems. Connett did praise Nova Scotia for being the most successful province in Canada. He also cited cities like Tuscany, San Francisco, and São Paulo as cities that have done a good job on the zero waste proposal. Connett proposes or emphasizes a pay-as-you-throw system for waste. In other space news, the European Space Agency's GOCE satellite reveals a gravity dip from ice loss. The GOC is the Gravity Field and Steady State Ocean Circulation Explorer, and for the past 10 years, it has been mapping Earth's gravity. The gravity on Earth's surface varies subtly from place to place, owing to factors such as the Earth's rotation, positions of mountains, positions of ocean trenches, volcanic activity, and earthquake. The GOC satellite has recently produced 5 gravity field maps generated from GOCE data. It's noteworthy in the data that changes in mass on large ice sheets show up as large gravitational shifts or variations on the gravity maps. The scientists that are working with the GOC satellite have found a decrease in gravity in Arctic ice sheets. This means that the Arctic ice sheet is shrinking by a volume of 125 kilometers squared per year, and Greenland is shrinking by 375 kilometers per year. So GOC is now looking at ice loss mass in glaciers and the gravity change in them to see if the glaciers are melting. In our last story, aviation-related volcanic hazards are being studied by NASA. A joint NOAA and NASA satellite, and NOAA stands for National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has been providing info to aviations about volcanic hazards. A volcano recently exploded in Japan, and on August 18th, a volcano called Barrabung in Iceland also exploded. Information from the ash lava outpours and seismic activities have been coming from the NASA and NOAA satellite called VIR, Imaging Radio Meter Suite, and it is showing maps of the volcanic activity. Data from these satellites are given to air traffic control organizations around the world and provided to them to make decisions to direct or redirect more than 4,000 flights. The largest air traffic shutdown since World War II occurred after the Iceland volcano blew up. There was $1.7 billion in losses for the airlines, but this is small considering the loss of lives or loss of aircraft that could have occurred if the data was not provided. In June 1982, for example, a British Airways B-747 flew through a volcanic eruption in Indonesia, and all its engines shut off. It dropped instantly from 37 to 12,000 feet before 3 of its engines turned back on. So NOAA and NASA are providing information about volcanic eruptions anywhere in the world. Only 10% of the world's volcano data comes from ground-based, so satellite provides 90% of the data for the information of volcanic eruptions. This is Marco. You have been listening to Space and Technology News.
Thank you, Marco. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments here on CITR 101.9 FM.
See you guys. See ya. Tuesday, October 7th, 2014 CE. One University has paired with United Way to bring the community together. Community.
C-O-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y.
Why? The annual UBC Spelling Bee. We're defending champions. Show me the honey. We'll spell for their right to be called spelling champions. You can bask in the glory. Tuesday, October 7th, 12:30 to 1:30 on the fourth floor of the Irving K. Barber Learning Center. Now, spell!
Concupiscence. C-O-N-C-U-P-I-S-C-E-N-C-E. Concupiscence.
Soiree. S-O-I-R-E-E.
Radio.
CITR?
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Sakuya, Talitin, Homasque Mustail.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. Broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
Up next, we have segment two, an interview with Maura Panjong. A solder student at UBC joined Morgan T at CITR last week to discuss her new crime-fighting app idea.
Maura, welcome to News 101.
Thanks, Morgan. Hi.
So I hear you have a new crime-fighting app that's supposed to be helping Vancouver lower our crime rates.
What I've come up with is an app idea called the Citizen Crime Fighter app. And basically what it does is it alerts potential witnesses that they may have been in the vicinity of a crime. And if they have been in the vicinity of a crime, it's going to forward them all of the information about the report, including any photos or video evidence. The story of how I invented the app goes like this. My husband and I were driving in Surrey on our way to a friend's house for dinner, and we came to this intersection that was just all treed in except for a single office building with a parking lot around it. And as we came to a stop, I was just daydreaming out the window, and I looked at the building, and the sun had gone down, so the lights were on inside, and I could see all the desks and the chairs and all the office furniture, and I could see clearly through. And so I thought to myself, you know, I bet nobody ever commits any crimes in that building because with all the people driving by, everyone would see what was going on. They'd call the police or whoever the authority was, and the bad guys would get caught. But then I realized, wait a minute, crimes happen around us all the time, and we never know that we're in the vicinity. But I know that if somebody had told me that I was in the area where a senior citizen had gone missing or where someone was murdered or where there was a robbery, if I knew that I had been there, I would definitely provide whatever information I had to the authority to help bring these bad guys to justice. But then I realized that the problem is there's never really been a way for any of us to be informed that we have been in the vicinity of a crime. I mean, sure, you can go to the crime-fighting websites and take a look at all of the case information and try to piece together if maybe you might have some information to give. But wouldn't it be great if there was an easy way for people just to be informed, hey, guess what? You were where a crime happened. Did you see anything? And so that's where my idea of the Citizen Crime Fighter app came in. And I want to create this and build it for the people of Vancouver and test it and see if it actually helps us reduce crime. And so what I've done is I've created a Facebook page where we can finish fleshing out the concept and where I can raise enough money to get it going from idea to workable concept that we can then roll out.
So when you're talking about getting information to people so that they know they're in the vicinity of a crime, what organizations would you be working with to pass that information on, and how would you maintain like confidentiality?
Well, as we already know, Crime Stoppers allows us to provide witness reports on any crime anonymously. And so that cloak of confidentiality that's afforded most witnesses would certainly continue with our app. Now what happens is a citizen crime fighter is going to download the app, and the app is going to track their GPS movements. So what happens is when the app finds a match between a crime and a citizen crime fighter's GPS movements, they get forwarded all the information and they can figure that out. And then they can opt to either submit the information through us as a separate third party, and then we will relay it to the particular crime fighting organization. And the citizen crime fighter can choose whether they want that to be anonymous, just like it's protected under the Crime Stoppers purview, or if they want to come forward with their identity so that if the police or whatever the organization is needs to get in contact with them to get more information, that they're available to do so.
So if someone chooses to submit confidentially, but you would have some sort of information on who had submitted, what user had submitted, correct?
Yes. As owners of the app, we would have that particular information. When the user registers, we collect that information, but we wouldn't necessarily forward it along to the appropriate investigative agency.
Now, if the police required that information, would you legally have to pass that on?
That is a very good question, and that's something that I'm going to want to put to minds better than mine to answer. Because we're in the development stage right now, these are one of the key questions that we want to ask ourselves.
And now, what's different between your proposed app and the Crime Stoppers app?
Well, right now, the existing app is very static. So you can have the app, and you can turn it on, and you can go and you can browse through all the crimes. But it doesn't personalize
those incidents to where you've been. And that's what makes the Citizen Crime Fighter app different, is that it actually does all the work for you. It filters through all the cases from all the investigative agencies that you want to help out with, and it only sends you the reports for which you might actually be able to have a direct effect.
Now, it's my understanding that you're a student at SOTR here at UBC.
Yes, I am. I just transferred in.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background and why this initiative in particular and this method of delivery is something that you're interested in?
Well, for starters, I've always been an inventor, and before I came to SOTR, I had a couple of other businesses as well. And in the case of my first business, what I had done is I had seen an opportunity in the nightclub environment where people would be meeting and hooking up for casual sex, but that they wouldn't have any safer sex options that they trusted to help them, you know, have the safest experience that they could. So when I saw that opportunity, I invented a safer sex kit, and I brought it to nightclubs and beer and wine stores in the Vancouver area in the early 2000s. And then after that, I got a lot of feedback from my customers saying that they liked the condoms that I had put in the kit, which I'd outsourced from Australia. And so then I responded to that feedback, and we brought the condoms into North America. So I've always been paying attention to trends and coming up with solutions. And so what happened with this particular app idea, I'd been in school for a while, and I'm always dreaming, coming up with new concepts, and it just sort of fell into my lap. I just was looking out the window saying, I bet nobody commit crimes. And then I realized, wait a minute, how would I know? And that's just pretty much how the app came up.
And so how are you proposing to fund this project?
Well, I've started a GoFundMe campaign, and what the goal is to take this project from idea to completely workable concept. I'm going to be working with Jiffy Apps in order to roll out the strategy, and so I want to raise $20,000 so that we can get from idea to concept. Once I've raised the $20,000 and we have it at that stage, my next goal is to go into the business community and see if we can raise the rest of the money to bring this to finish the app so that we can release it onto the market and have everybody use it for free. I really think that this is a kind of initiative where all of the community could come together, both the residents and the business community, and that if we collaborate and come together, we really can reduce crime.
Thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you so much.
For more information, check out the Citizen Crime Fight app Facebook page to give your feedback.
We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
For our next segment of the show, we have a piece by news correspondent Rohit Joseph. Protests have erupted in Hong Kong over China's alleged failure to live up to its promise of providing universal suffrage and a fully democratic electoral process for Hong Kong's 2017 elections. Students in Hong Kong initiated the Occupy Central movement, organizing a massive sit-in protest in the government and financial hubs of the city. Rohit spoke to two UBC students who are part of the Global Solidarity for Hong Kong movement. They are intent on raising awareness and helping support the protesters in Hong Kong on campus and around the world.
Great to have you guys here at CITR. So we'll just get a little introduction from each of you and your status as a student at UBC, just a little bit about yourself.
I'm Virgil. I'm a UBC student for second year, and I come from Hong Kong.
I'm Duncan. I'm a fourth year student. I was born in Vancouver, but I studied in Hong Kong for 10 years.
Okay, guys, so if you can give any background to our listeners who they may not know the situation in Hong Kong going on, how did it get started from your understanding? when did the protests really formulate?
Yeah, I can talk about like what the reason why there is a protest. In 1997, in the transfer of sovereignty of Hong Kong, China has promised that it will enact universal suffrage. And also, there will be a high degree of autonomy, and Hong Kong people can rule Hong Kong. But then, the Chinese government is now trying to manipulate the election of chief executive. Like, on 31st of August this year, the Chinese legislature has announced a framework on electoral reform for 2017. And there's a pro-Beijing filtering committee, like for 1,200 members in the electoral process. And it is like when you are picking an orange from the only open store, but all of them are rotten. So that's the problem, right? And at the same time, the riot police use massive weapons, tear gas and pepper spray, to attack unarmed students who were participating in the class boycott. And they gathered peacefully around like a place called Civic Square, which is near the government office, and they just asked for a conversation with the chief executive. So we are here because of the brutality of Hong Kong police and also the manipulation of Chinese government.
How are you guys organizing on UBC campus? How are you trying to get people aware of the issue?
We have set up a booth. So firstly, we would like to raise the local awareness on this issue by posting newspapers and delivering leaflets and yellow ribbons, so to let more people know about what's happening in Hong Kong. And because of the international watch on the situation is a way to protection to the protesters. And also, we would like to provide support to Hong Kong students by writing supporting notes on memos and taking pictures with cardboards having some slogans. So those materials will be sent back to Hong Kong, and so the students can see it.
Do you have any family or relatives in Hong Kong that are involved at all in the protests? Is there a personal connection here for you with the protests going on?
Actually, my father actually works in Hong Kong, and he just went to the I believe he went on the street and actually supporting the students. And I studied in Hong Kong for a really long time, so most of the friends I know, they are supporting this event and this protest as well, because as university students just like us, especially in Hong Kong, they are standing in the front line of Hong Kong's future. That's why they're really aware of the democracy status in Hong Kong right now.
I've heard about this movement called the Silent Majority. It seems like they're a counter-protest movement. They claim that they do not agree with the methods of the Occupy Central. Have you guys heard anything about this? And if so, what are your thoughts on the Silent Majority?
Yeah, I do notice that, because there are people that are against the protest, because they are blocking, like protesters are sitting on the main roads, and like they're affecting the daily, obviously they're affecting the daily life of most of the citizens in Hong Kong.
Do you know what their what their grievances are with the protests? Could you maybe give any background as to why they're against the protests?
Because like protesting people are affecting their life right now. Mm. For example, like they cannot get to work, they cannot go to hospital, and like especially companies, like they cannot open their restaurants, they cannot open their shops, because no tourist is gonna come, and yeah, and those kind of stuff. But like I believe there are something more important than that is the future of Hong Kong.
What do you make of the situation of the Chinese government? Are they? Do you think there's a chance that they will respond to Occupy's demands? And do they have any reason why they should listen to the Hong Kong people? Are they reliant on Hong Kong for certain things?
I think because we just mentioned, we are the protester to in some degree affecting daily life in Hong Kong. Like mm-hmm. the stock market is obviously a big part of Hong Kong. Like it's affecting that. We like protesters are doing this to put pressure on the on the Hong Kong government and China mm-hmm. to actually respond to us. In terms of how confident we are that the Chinese government will respond to us, I don't know yet. I don't know, but I believe if our protest, if the protester keep level up their actions, they will put more and more pressure. And what we are doing right now overseas, raising awareness in different cities and countries, also put a pressure in the Chinese government. And also, as we mentioned, you can also protect the protesters in Hong Kong.
Lastly, if people are out there and they're wanting to support Hong Kong protesters, what do you know any resources they can utilize to help support the protesters in Hong Kong?
At first, they can like carry a yellow ribbon on them. So yellow ribbon represents return. So we want democracy to return to like citizens and people. And also, they can get to know more about what's happening in Hong Kong and tell their relatives or friends to raise the awareness like among people. And I have just said before, like the international watch is very important. Yeah.
I think if a social network also do a really good job of letting the world know what's happening. But however, I do want to note that there are false information on the internet. People have to be aware of the source of what they hear and what they see on the internet, because some people are using that to go against the protesters.
Fair enough. I think one last question that I just had, because you mentioned the yellow ribbon. What is the significance of a yellow ribbon in particular? Why that symbol?
Because a yellow symbolizes a bring back and also a bright future. And if we can have the democracy, it definitely is going to affect the future of Hong Kong significantly. That's what and we believe democracy can bring us a bright future. And also we hope we want, because we had democracy before when in 1997 we were promised that we will although we're in one country, but there are two systems, we can rule ourselves. So we want it back. We want that promise back.
All right. Thank you guys so much. It was a privilege to talk to you.
That was Rohit Joseph talking about the umbrella revolution going on in Hong Kong right now. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Costa Pradanovich.
And I'm Cole Goodwin. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, or online at citr.ca. Thank you for being with us.
Up next, On the program, we have a report written for News 101 by news correspondent Emily Blake.
Dipan Boudlakoti, a 24-year-old Ottawa-born man, has recently lost his bid for Canadian citizenship. This is because children born to foreign diplomatic staff in Canada are not considered Canadian citizens. Uncertainty remains over whether Boudlakoti's parents were employed by the Indian High Commissioner in Ottawa at the time of his birth. Boudlakoti's parents and their former employer claim that they stopped working for the commission in July 1989, before Dipan was born in October. However, some government documents do not register the termination of their official diplomatic privilege until December 1989. Boudlakoti grew up under the assumption that he was a Canadian citizen and has an Ontario birth certificate and held a Canadian passport. It was not until May 2010 when he was sentenced to 3 years in prison for weapons and cocaine trafficking that the government informed him that he was not considered a citizen. He was given a deportation order in December 2011 to India, despite having never been to the country and with no family there. India also does not recognize him as a citizen and has refused to issue him travel documents. Boudlakoti says that this has left him effectively stateless, with no access to healthcare, social services, or employment opportunities. He currently lives under strict conditions, including a 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. curfew, is required to live with his parents, and attend biweekly signings with the Canadian Border Services Agency. Immigration lawyer Peter Stida has said that, quote, there is absolutely no reasonable basis to doubt that Dipan is Canadian. Rather than stripping him of his status, the government is legally obliged to restore his citizenship and remove all conditions against him. Boudlakoti stands to appeal the ruling and has said, I refuse to be exiled from my homeland to be made an outcast in my own society. This case is important for everyone in Canada. It sets a precedent that we should all be worried about.
Thank you for that piece. For our next segment, we have Greenpeace representative Aaron speaking with our news correspondent Valerio DeFeo about the importance of preserving healthy Arctic ice and their upcoming event to raise awareness about the issue.
This is Valerio from News 101. I am here with Aaron tonight from Greenpeace Vancouver office. Hi, Aaron. They are organizing a big international campaign against oil drilling in the Arctic. And this campaign is called Ice Right. And if you put the hashtag in front, then you can see different events from the world because it's International Bicycle Ride. Aaron, please tell us more about this.
Ice Ride is a global event where there will be thousands of people taken to the streets in over 160 cities in 33 countries on 4 continents. It's both a celebration of the Arctic and also a call for protection of this unique part of the world. Recently, Greenpeace conducted a poll, and in 30 countries on 6 continents showed overwhelming support for the idea of an Arctic sanctuary. So this means the idea that the Arctic Ocean, the high Arctic, should be kept free of oil drilling and destructive industrial fishing.
Aaron, tell us what happens, please, before the ice ride begins, and what route will people be taking during the ice ride? Will there be some fun activities for people to take part in?
Yeah, so all of the ice rides will have similar elements in that they're fun and they're celebratory, while we're also talking about serious issues. We do want to really show everyone involved in Arctic politics that the world is watching and that there really is a growing movement to protect the Arctic. So in Vancouver, as in many places, we'll be having a family-friendly, critical mass-style bike ride. So if you have your bike, your skateboard, whatever wheeled ride, and we're meeting in Vancouver at noon in Connaught Park at the 2300 block of West 10th Avenue in Vancouver. So that's West 10th Avenue and Vine and 12 o'clock. We'll be meeting there. You'll have the chance to decorate your bike, mingle with some folks, have some snacks, and listen to some speakers talking about why protecting the Arctic is important, and also why Greenpeace and we're encouraging other people to be standing in solidarity with Clyde River and other Arctic communities that are opposing oil extraction in the Arctic. At the end of the ice ride in Trout Lake, we'll also have hot chocolate and a chance for folks to hang out a little bit and mingle again before we call it a day. And yeah, we're really hoping that it will be a fun event, and we're excited that it's happening in Vancouver, and we're really excited to really show that the diverse group of people who are in favor of protecting the Arctic. And if you need a reminder, you can check out iceride.org/Vancouver, and all of the details for tomorrow's ride, which is going to be super fun, is on that site.
Thank you, Erin, for joining us on News 101. The ice ride will begin tomorrow, October 4th at Connaught Park at 12 noon with pre-ride activities. And at 1 p.m., the ice ride leaves the park and ride along the West 10th Avenue bikeway. And at 2 p.m., bikers will arrive at Trout Lake Park. See you there.
That's our program for today, October 3rd. Today's newscast was brought to you by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Cole Goodwin.
And I'm Costa Perdanovic. Today's show was produced by Alberto Montilla. From the entire news team at CITR, thank you for listening. Stranded right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is CITR. This is Stranded, a little show about Australian and Canadian independent music. Thanks for tuning in. You can catch us online at ausstrandedradio.com, and we're also on Twitter at ausstranded. So today we have a special guest, Jake Hardy. He is an electronic experimental musician. He's also part of a local band called Other Jesus, and most significantly for our purposes today, he is a member of the collective that runs the Red Gate Art Society. The Red Gate is a venue on East Hastings Street, which hosts a fantastic array of local cutting-edge music. And it's also a visual art space as well. So I had a chat with Jake this afternoon in the alley outside. It was a nice sunny day, so we plunked ourselves out on the staircase back there. And Jake told me a little bit about the history of the Red Gate and about his music as well. So that's going to be coming up fairly soon. But first up, this week was interesting. I did a fill-in show here on CITR Radio. There's a great show called Folk Oasis, hosted by Val, and it's a long-running show. And Val is in Europe, and she kindly offered to have me fill in for her. So I got together a whole bunch of music, including, of course, some Australian music, because, you know, again, it's what I know, so it's what I play, to feature on her show. So a couple of the acts that I got together were real favorites of mine, so I thought I'd replay them on my show here as well. It can't hurt to play some more Paul Kelly and Tim Rogers. So I have both of these artists coming up, two fantastic Australian singer-songwriters that should be familiar to listeners of this show. So let's start with Paul Kelly.